I don't have any new light, and I don't have any new doctrine, but I trust with the help of the Lord I have some fresh inspiration for you tonight. As a young boy, the story of David and Goliath was one of my favorite, and I would guess that there's many young children here tonight that is very familiar with that story and the events that took place. And I want to try to emphasize a few things that seems to have really began to stand out to me. And as I've meditated on these thoughts for some time, it seems like it gets bigger as time goes on. So desire your prayers that our thoughts will be as concise as possible. My guess is that if there's anyone that would be going to a sporting event and the contest got to the point that they went into overtime, they would feel like they got their money's worth. So if we go into overtime, I'd like you to consider the extra value and not become too weary with us tonight. It's not my intent to keep us too long, but I'd like to be able to express what's on my heart. So the cause, the word cause, one of the definitions I find, says the reason or motive that urges, moves, or impels the mind to act or decide. So the reason or motive that urges, moves, or impels the mind to act or decide. David is known for saying, "Is there not a cause?" Yes. So I'd like to look at that story a little bit closer. I'd like to begin in the 16th chapter of 1 Samuel. And the 15th chapter is the story of Saul's failure to carry out the commands that God had for him. And in chapter 16, we have, Saul did not carry out God's commands in chapter 15 in destroying the people that God commanded him to. And Samuel began to mourn because God withdrew his presence and his blessings on Saul's leadership. And after a period of time in the 16th chapter, it seems that God inspired him to anoint a king. And we know the story of how he went to Jesse and ultimately anointed David to be the king. And it says in verse 14 of chapter 16, it says, "But the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him." And so we're going to kind of skip through some of this. It's kind of like playing a 33 on a 78 speed, if y'all know what I'm talking about there, on an old record player. So the story here is that the Lord's Spirit had been withdrawn, and man's remedy for that is the advice that Saul would get someone that could maybe play some music to soothe his spirit and to cause him to feel more relaxed and comfortable. So amongst Saul's servants, there was someone that was acquainted with Jesse and with David. I believe that they were completely oblivious of that David had been anointed to be king. And it says in verse 17, "And Saul said unto his servants, Provide me now a man that can play well, and bring him to me. Then answered one of the servants and said, Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning in playing, and a mighty valiant man, and a man of war, and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Lord is with him." So there's several things here about David that he points out that's very positive attributes. One is that he's cunning and playing. He's skillful. Whether he was saying this from his own personal experience or from reputation, I don't know, but he was skillful in playing music. He said also that he is a mighty valiant man and a man of war. I believe that somehow the stories of him defeating the lion and the bear had got spread out. I don't know at this point if maybe David's older brothers that appeared to be engaged in the military had told the stories about their little brother's episodes with the lion and the bear. I don't know, but there was some knowledge of that. I believe that's where that's coming from. And he says it's prudent in manners. To be prudent and prudent in matters. Prudent means that there's a level of wisdom of knowing when to go out and when to come in and when to attack and when to withdraw and develop a plan of attack. All of those things are involved in being prudent. And last of all, he said that he's a comely person. I would say that we would say David was ruggedly handsome. He was a man that people looked on and said, "My, what a fine specimen of humanity." So that's quite a combination, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So they sent for him, and Jesse allowed his son to come. And it says here in verse 21, "And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer." Now, to be an armor bearer, I believe, meant that he had a lot of personal contact. If you're going to be in a place that you're helping someone put their armor on and maybe taking it off and maintain it and all of those things, that's a pretty close relationship. Today we might say that Saul had a personal assistant. So he was acquainted not only with maybe his habits of whether he put the helmet on first or put his breastplate on. I don't know what the order of events was, but he was acquainted with how Saul wanted to do things. I believe he was acquainted with Saul's family and his household and how he conducted himself. And so David here, to me, it's an image of David having a very thorough knowledge of Saul's behaviors. And he came with the purpose, with the intent of being useful. He had the knowledge already that he had been anointed king, but he was willing to do what the door of opportunity opened up for him. So here he was. So it was so pleasing that Saul sent a message to his dad and said, let him stay. And it says in verse 23, "It came to pass when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him." So he was effective.
Yes.
He was effective in playing the instrument. He was effective in being his personal assistant. And we don't really have a timeline as to how long this went on in this manner. May have been a somewhat of an extended period of time, but chapter 17 begins telling us that the Philistines gathered together their armies. They wanted to, I'm sure, recover land that Israel had taken from them. They wanted to gain territory themselves, but it was a contest of territorial conflict of some sort, I believe. And if we read verses 1 down through verses 11, we get a description of Goliath. We get a description of the confrontation that he presented to the Israelites of, "You send somebody out to do battle with me one-on-one, and the outcome of that will determine who wins the whole conflict." I'd like to stop just a moment and help us to remember that Saul, when he was anointed king, was one of his attributes was that he stood head and shoulders above everyone else. I would say that would be maybe somewhere in the upper 6 foot range, maybe 7 foot tall. And we find from reading here and using the measurement system they did that Goliath most likely was somewhere in the 9 foot range. So we have Saul that was head and shoulders most likely taller than David. And we have Goliath that was obviously head and shoulders taller than Saul. And if you take that 2 steps back, the obvious discrepancy in size between Goliath and David was tremendous. So I want to keep that in mind. There's no question but what Goliath was a giant. He was a very formidable foe. He was someone that offered significant resistance, and he offered an amazing arsenal of equipment. He was not only had it lugging around, he knew how to use it. And he had been effective, I believe, in the past, not only with his size, but with the weapons that he had. I want us to realize at this point that also that David was no stranger to Saul. But I want to skip down to verse 15 in chapter, well, maybe verse 12 in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. It says, "Now David was a son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul." A man that had 8 sons, this was significant. It was a sign of authority, a sign of power, I believe. And he was well known because of his household in the days of Saul. And it says, "And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul in the battle." And the names of these sons, and we have those listed here, says David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. "But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." Now, I don't understand exactly why he went home. It seemed like that if there was a battle to fight, that's when the armor bearer would be most needed. But I'm just reading what it says here, and it tells us that David went home to take care of the sheep. Maybe because his brothers had these other responsibilities, but he wasn't there for a period of time. But he knew who Saul was. He was not a stranger to him. He was not a stranger to the way Saul behaved himself and the way he thought and the way he planned his tactics and those kind of things. It was something that I believe David had some level of understanding about. In verse 16 it says, "And the Philistines drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. 40 days in the morning and in the evening, Goliath came and gave his challenge. 40 days, the soldiers of the Israelites, all of those, including Saul, heard this challenge, and they all hesitated about taking that challenge. Yes. Every one of them did not step forward. And 40 days of confrontation is wearisome. It was something that the Israelite people, I think, if there had been some skirmishes, if there were some battles in those 40 days, it was not decisive. It was not conclusive. There was no retreating of the enemy. There was no retreating of the Israelite army. It was a standoff. And the turning point and the crux of the matter was this giant that came out and issued this challenge morning and evening. And because of it being 40 days, Jesse became concerned, and he sent David with some food, and he said, "I want you to go down and check on your brothers and see how things are going. So David, in verse 20, rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him and came to the trench. The place of the bulwarks that they had set up, the place where they had set the battle in array. And as he came there, it says, as Jesse commanded him, and he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. Was David shouting? I don't know. I think he was somewhat enthused about getting this conflict started and over with. There was something about David. He had had a little taste of maybe the military talk and all of that around Saul's presence, and I believe he wanted to see the thing progress. It says, for Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army, and David left his carriage or the things he brought in the hand of the keeper of the things or the stuff, and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. So he heard the challenge that we could have read. You know it from the past. And the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. This is at least the 41st day that they retreated from the challenge of one man. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Pretty obvious. I mean, he's tall as some of the trees, and yet they ask him this very obvious question. Have you seen this fellow? Surely, to defy Israel, is he come up? It shall be, they go ahead and tell him, there's a reward out, there's a bounty here. It shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. So what did that mean? Riches. I would have to assume that meant monetary goods of some sort. Doesn't say how much, but it was enough to be considered rich. In their time, it was enough to probably be self-sustaining. He wouldn't have to be tilling the ground and watching sheep, but he could hire a sheep herder if he wanted one. To marry the king's daughter, that would be quite rewarding, I would have thought, in that age. And in our time, someone that marries into a royal family, that's even, it makes the news today, doesn't it? And then he said he'll make his household or his family, he'll make them free, make his father's house free. I've done a little research on that, and it seems like he's saying that you won't owe any taxes anymore. You'll be some of the nobility, the ruling class, instead of just someone that has a good reputation and maybe good work ethics. You'll be one of those that's in charge. We'll elevate your status in their time that they live. That's quite a reward, isn't it? And notice, it says, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach for Israel, from Israel? He seemed like he was asking, well, what do I get for doing this? They just told him, right? This is one of the points I want us to get a hold of. David saw something in this giant that the others didn't see. The others saw an obstacle and an opportunity for personal reward. That's all they saw. And they were afraid. They had been afraid for 41 days now. at least 41 days. They had been retreating for over 40 days because this giant came out. And the only reward they had was riches and honor and selfish gratification. That's the only reward that they could see. That's the only benefit that they saw. But David asked a question. He said, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him according after this manner, saying, "So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." Their mind went right back and said, "The king promised you'll be rich, you can marry his daughter, and your father's house will be part of the ruling class. You won't owe taxes, you'll be the one that taxes are paid to." That's as far as they could see. That's as high as they could look, is personal fulfillment and gratification. That's all they said. That's all they could see. That's all they could fathom here. And David's brother, older brother, reproached him for meddling in this thing here. And that, don't you know the older brother felt conspicuous? He hadn't went out and took on Goliath. And here his little brother was saying, "Well, what kind of reward, or what does this man get, or for taking away the reproach on Israel?" And David said, verse 29, What have I now done? What is it that's so reproachful about me asking when I'm looking right through this physical thing and I'm seeing something that looks like it ought to be obvious to everybody?" And it wasn't. He said, "Is there not a cause? Is there not a cause?" And he turned from him to another. It seems like this is David. "And spake after the same manner." He went and turned to someone else and said, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel?" And they told him again. It says, "And the people answered him again after the former matter." That's all they could see. You know, one of the most dangerous things that we can do for long-term success is just see the personal gratification, the personal fulfillment, and the personal reward. That's all we can see sometimes. And if that's all we can see tonight, I'm going to tell you, we've missed the cause. We've missed the cause. David, if you remember, he was at least twice removed, head and shoulders shorter than Goliath. Maybe as much as 3 feet. That's a lot. I don't know what it would be like to stand up against a man that was proportionally 3 foot taller than me. It would be a very formidable foe. And I'm going to tell you that I need a cause to take on that type of contest. And David saw through all of it. It wouldn't have mattered if Saul had 3 daughters and he said you can marry them all at the same time. It wouldn't have mattered. That's not what David saw. That's not the thing that motivated him. So what motivates us tonight? So we know how the story went. Saul said, "I want to talk to this man that wants to take on Goliath." He came to Saul's presence and David told him how that he had been able to slay the lion and the bear. And we look in verse 37. It said, "David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said, unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. The man that the Spirit of God had departed from said, go, and the Lord be with thee.
Yes.
And we know that we went through trying on Saul's armor, and we knew before he tried it wouldn't fit. Saul was head and shoulders taller than me. It'd be like some of you fathers telling your son that's 2 feet shorter than you, well, just put my clothes on. They don't work very good. You can't keep your things in the proper places. It just wouldn't work. David said it won't work. So I'm going to have to take the things that the Lord's helped me with in the past. Only things that I know that works. The cause was enough. It wasn't the promise of those other things. It wasn't the promise of riches. It wasn't the promise of getting to marry the king's daughter. It wasn't the promise of becoming part of nobility and taxes being paid to you instead of you paying the tax. None of that really was the cause. Everybody else had missed it. Everybody else had only looked for those things that would be personally gratifying to them. But David said, there's a cause. There's been other men through time that responded to a cause. Job did.
Yes.
Job was faithful to a cause.
Yes, he was.
More than one occasion, his response to those that were around him was reflecting a cause.
Yes, it was.
Chapter 27, verse 5, he says, God forbid that I should justify you till I die. I will not remove mine integrity from me. Another place he said, told his wife, you speak like a foolish woman. I can't back up on what I've committed to the Lord. You know, old Jeremiah was faithful to the cause.
He was.
Daniel was faithful to the cause. Those three Hebrew children were faithful to the cause. Well, I'll tell you something, O King. If the Lord don't deliver us, we still can't bow down. That's against the cause. Moses was faithful to the cause. There was a time that he stood between the Lord and the people. Gideon was faithful to a cause. Didn't feel very strong in himself. Got his army whittled down to 300. And yet, he said, Lord, if that's what you want, I'll do it. It's not much different than 5 smooth stone going against a giant than having only 300 men with pitchers and torches and something to make some noise with. Not much difference. There was a cause. Jesus was faithful to a cause, wasn't he? In Luke, the 22nd chapter, in the 42nd verse, he said, last part of the verse, I'll read the whole thing. It says, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. Not my will. There's something more than recognition of mankind here. There's something more than me riding in triumphantly and becoming crowned a king. There's something more than having people bow down to me. There's a cause. The cause of salvation for my generation and those that might come after us. There was a man by the name of Huss that was faithful to a cause.
Yes, he was.
There's a man by the name of Martin Luther that was faithful to a cause. There's a man by the name of D.S. Warner that was faithful to a cause.
Yes.
There's a man by the name of Fred Pruitt that was faithful to a cause. In our nation, there's been those that's been faithful to a cause. In the Gettysburg Address, Abraham Lincoln said this one phrase, said that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. There was a cause. 100 years later, Martin Luther King Jr. referred to him as a great American. And he gave his life for a cause. I believe there's those in our midst tonight that are responding to a cause. Not in it for the money. Not in it for the recognition.
No.
Not in it for the prestige.
No.
I want to tell you, fellowship is a result of the cause. It's not the cause. I enjoy visiting a lot, but that's not the cause. I like to see your faces, but the cause is bigger than that. There's been motivational speakers that can get your attention, and then they sign up. They have little tables with assistants, and you get signed up for their cause. We don't have that here. There's organizations that maybe want you to sign that you'll agree to adhere to a certain code of conduct or something like that. We're not going to do that either. Well, I want to tell you a little secret. When the cause of God is put to the forefront, there's giants that come tumbling down. There's giants of social pressure and the things that people around you may infer that you ought to be doing and the things that they say is not necessary. But there's a cause bigger than that.
That's right.
We have a lot of technological advancements, but I'm going to tell you, that giant will come down too in the face of God. I believe there's those in our midst, some in this building, some not in this building, that are responding to the cause. They're looking beyond the potential reward of recognition. Oh, you did it right. Oh, it's more than that. David said, this is just an uncircumcised Philistine. He don't meet any of the qualifications. He's defying the God that I serve. Do you remember what happened when he went out to actually face him in conflict? The Philistines scoffed at him and said, am I a dog? What do you got there, a stick? And what did he say? I come to you in the name of the God of Israel. And what happened? That giant went down. The giants will go down today if we can see the cause.
Yes.
Congregations have been built because of the cause, not because of the promise of fame and success. But congregations have been built. Camp meetings established. Publishing companies started. And it's only going to be the cause that keeps those things in place.
That's right.
It's only going to be the cause. And if we've got our eyes off of the cause tonight, and we're looking for the tasty little things that we call wonderful fellowship. And folks, I really enjoy it. I've never been treated bad when I was here. And I enjoy being, I physically and literally enjoy being here and enjoying your hospitality. But if we don't look beyond that and see the cause, it's going to crumble. We're going to lose what we got. We're going to have to be true to the cause. David saw this big giant in this. They told him at least three times, well, you get to be rich. You get to marry the king's daughter and you become one of the ruling class of society. And he didn't take that into consideration. He said there's an uncircumcised Philistine and there's a cause. Folks, the thing that's going to sustain what others that were true to the cause started is going to be the cause.
That's right.
We're going to have to buy into the cause. When the ones that have begun the effort, and I don't know, maybe somebody knows the history well enough, who was the first pastor here? How did this congregation get started? Maybe you know the answer to that. But they're not here. So what's going to keep it going? The enthusiasm and the momentum of getting together and enjoying one another's company. And I enjoy it. That's not what's going to keep it going. It's going to be the cause. It's not the good food in the dining hall. It's not the activities that we may engage in. No matter how good of friends and how much we like one another right now, I'm going to tell you, if we lose the cause, we won't be together.
That's right.
That's serious.
Yes, it is.
But it's the cause, folks. The cause is going to make the difference. The cause is the one that's going to take the giants out. The cause is the one that's going to cause us to be able to say, I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord. I'm not coming to you because if I take you out, I'll be rich. I'll have some personal gratification and I'll be famous or something like that. That's not going to be the secret sauce.
No.
The secret to success is being true to the cause. The true to the cause that Jesus came when he said, not my will, but thine be done. The cause that the Hebrew children said, even if we don't come out of this alive, we can't bow down. I don't bow down to those things. That's the cause that's going to keep this thing going. That's the cause that's going to make it successful in the generations ahead. I appreciate our young people and I really love them. I appreciate the songs that they sing.
Yes,
I want to challenge you each one to get a hold of the cause.
Yes.
It's only the cause that'll keep us. It's only the cause that'll cause this to prosper.
Yes.
Without the cause, I'll fail. Without the cause, you'll fail. May the Lord help us. Be true to the cause. You pray for me.